joining us now, Packers legend, Pro Football Hall of Famer, and a golfer that took plenty of money from Tausch, even though Tausch never got any money from him. It is Brett Favre on Wilde and Tausch. Brett, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I don't remember taking any money from Tausch.
Well, I'll say this.
I don't remember giving any away either, but I don't.
Well, we'll talk about that later.
Mark was kind of sneaky. I think in his secret life, he was a professional poker player.
Sheep said, Brett, my poker game stinks. I'm not good
at it,
but Sheep said's kind of my game.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Brett, what do you think, man? Are you pretty excited? I know you've been doing this now. I think this is going to be your fifth year of coming up here and doing this.
Yeah, I think it's five.
Your first year was definitely your most favorite, even though you got smoked when you came up. This time around, you get
to... I don't remember that year.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I have highlights. You get a chance to play with Jack Nicklaus, and I know when I saw you a couple weeks ago, that was something that is really a cool thing for you.
Well, I mean, how could it not be? And I've told so many people in the last few weeks who I'm playing with, and the only thing I could compare it to in regards to me playing with Jack Nicklaus, or anyone playing with Jack Nicklaus for that matter, would be the equivalent of serving mass with the Pope. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
He's definitely royalty when it comes to golf, yeah.
I mean, when you talk about living legends, I mean, there's no question the top of the list is Jack Nicklaus. So, I'm thrilled to have this opportunity.
And Brett, I remember when we first drove in that first year, I don't think you necessarily knew exactly what you were getting into. And it's only, I mean, this weekend will be the biggest with Jack coming and you and Toby Keith. But can you just talk a little bit about how amazing that experience was and how this thing has grown into being one, you know, I think one of the best weeks in sports in Wisconsin, but just from your point of view, how awesome it is from a charitable standpoint and why you keep coming back?
Well, it has grown each and every year. And I think I've said this every year. I really am not surprised. And I can point to so many different examples from day one of the charity game, the softball game that we had in Appleton, if you want to really dig deep, I think it's still going on. Am I correct?
Yeah.
I know Donald took it over, and then I think
Jordy. Now it's Devontae Adams.
Clay broke his nose last year. Yeah, it's still going.
But the support that Wisconsin fans in general, whether they're a Packer fan or not, you know, most are Packer fans. But I'm just talking about when it comes to their own. I've never seen anything like it. So, in some respects, I'm surprised each and every year because you go, I just don't know if it can get any bigger. But then, as you said, I expect when driving in that, you know, I don't know if it can be twice as many people. I don't know if that's accommodating, but you know, the people, they show out. They show up and show out, you know, and it's like the Trek ride, which you just referred to. You know, I saw you a couple weeks ago, and, you know, it kind of rained a little bit at first, and, you know, be one of those days where if you're John Burke, you're a little bit worried about, you know, what type of participation you're going to get. But by all accounts, I think it was as many as they wanted, and then some. But again, Wisconsin, it's different. You know, the people are different, and in a good way. So I foresee this being the biggest week on the senior tour, period. And if it's not, I think that this is going to be the number one tournament on the senior tour, period. And again, it may be already.
Brett, you talk about how Packers fans have supported you, whether it's for this or the softball game or whatever. Is it amazing and B, really warm your heart that whether or not there's something to be forgiven for or not is not the discussion here. But it wasn't that long ago where maybe you would have had some apprehension coming back here, and now it is all love for you. I mean, is that still a little bit amazing to you that they, whatever happened 08, 09, 10, you are now back where you are and people just put their arms around you no matter what?
Well, you know, I mean, I really don't think about it anymore, but there was a time that, you know, I questioned whether or not I should set foot on Wisconsin soil again. And maybe that's a stretch, but you know what I'm saying. Understandably so. But we have always considered Wisconsin as a second home, a second family to us, and that hasn't changed. Now, we can all point to times in our life where, whether it be siblings, a family member in general, a friend that has either been hurtful towards us or vice versa, something that requires some type of healing over time or even forgiveness. And, you know, generally it happens. You know, it may take time, but it happens. And this is no different. And so when the time started drawing near, when I knew that my name would at least come up for the Hall of Fame, I wasn't like eagerly waiting. Oh, I hope I get in. But it was more, you know, what to expect, I guess, either good or bad, you know, obviously hoping for good and really kind of relying on past experiences, not necessarily mine, but similar in, you know, like Sterling holing out, or, you know, I mean, that's like one of the first things I remember where there was a little bitterness from both sides. And then it was okay again. And you can point to so many of those different times in Wisconsin people again. They're true to form, you know, they come through. And so, yeah, there was worryness more than anything on my part, but why I was worried, you know, as I look back, I think, what were you worried for? You know, in time, things would be okay. You know, it is what it is. And you see, it's happening to Clay Matthews now. It happens to other players, and it will happen, you know, throughout history. And Clay Matthews, I think, when it's all said and done, will best be remembered and won't want to be remembered as a Packer. And that's the way I wanted to be remembered, and that's the way I will be remembered.
So it's a good thing you didn't lead the Vikings to the Super Bowl championship, correct?
Why you got to give me such tough questions?
He's a hard-hitting journalist, you know, Brett. Hey, you know that.
It didn't happen, so you know what? We don't have to worry about it. I tried my best, so, put it that way.
Hey, Brett, you bring up an interesting point, though, because I remember when, you know, at the tail end of your time in Green Bay, you made a comment about saying, hey, Joe Montana got traded, I think you were kind of talking, you know, you want everything to end rosy, but it typically doesn't. And Aaron Rodgers, yes, he just signed a new extension. I felt like that's where you were going with it. You never know, right? You think that everybody's going to finish it where you're at, but that doesn't always happen.
You know, Aaron and I have really spoke a lot in the last year and a half, and by no means would I consider myself a mentor, but you know, it's funny, he and I were talking not that long ago, and he made the comment, sort of joking, but so true. He goes, you know, I'm kind of now at that spot or time in my career where you exactly were when I came in. And I see and understand why you were what you were. And I don't know exactly from a definition point what that exactly means, but somewhat reclusive, I guess, in regards to when you leave the building and also when you're in it. I watched film with the guys. I was eager to help because I wanted to win, but really you kind of look around and you go, where did everyone go? I'm the last man standing that was here when I got here. And that's the case with Aaron now, other than Pepper, Flea, Kurt.
Pepper left.
You know,
Pepper
Red, just Brian, and T-Bone, and those guys. Everyone else is gone.
Yeah. Well, hey, Brent, is there something you would have done different with the younger players? Or I understand it's just you're at a different point in your life than a lot of the guys that were coming in.
You know, the only thing, to answer your question, no, there is nothing I would have done different. And you and I, we spent a lot of time together in meetings, a golf course, playing, you know, in the huddle, TV timeouts, so on and so forth. And I think that you, as well as the other guys that I played with, would say they like me or you like me, but I gave it all I could, you know, and you knew I was in it for the right reasons. That being said, what is different when you get to the age that you got to, that Aaron got to, when you're the elder statesman, is you're not really into what the young guys are into. You know, you're over by your locker. You could care less where they're going that night or who they're going with or what they got planned. You're just kind of wanting to get through the day, go home, play with the kids, help with homework, you know, something like that, and make it through the next day, and then so on and so forth. And that's – so when you're 22, 23, 24, you know, and that's that phase of your career, man, you're on scholarship, you know, hey, whatever, you know, and so – you look at it differently when you get to the age that Aaron's at now, and now he gets it. You look around and at the team snack, and you go, you know what? I'm the last guy left.
Right.
And that's, you know, it's reality.
Talking with Brett Favre on Wilde and Tausch. Don't forget, he is part of the celebrity foursome at the AmFam Championship this weekend. Brett, it's amazing to hear you talk about your conversations with Rodgers and how he now recognizes that he's going through the same things you did. He's going through something else that you did, actually a couple of times, and that's a coaching change. 13 years with Mike McCarthy, now Matt LaFleur comes in, and a lot of the focus is on how are these two going to get along? How is Matt LaFleur going to help Aaron Rodgers get back to being Aaron Rodgers after the way last season went? What do you remember from first 06 when Mike McCarthy came in? You were coming off a tough year in 05. What are your recollections of that year and the challenges that came with it? And maybe Mike McCarthy trying to change you the way Matt LaFleur is going to try and make some changes with Rodgers.
Well, I think initially there's excitement, and I think that you could point to that in so many areas, fans, the coaching, just the staff itself, you know, for the most part, all new, and they're all excited. They're all, you know, eager to, you know, to take the Packers or bring the Packers back to, you know, where people expect them to be. The fans obviously are so eager to see what the new product is going to look like. And the players, you know, there's this sense of, you know, especially the younger players, like, you know, this is a new chance for me to prove my worth and so on and so forth. Now, I think, and as I think back, it's been quite a while, there is maybe a renewed excitement for an older player, and I don't know, you know, I can't speak for everyone who's been through that situation, but there's also, like in Aaron's case, and I don't know this for certain, but there's also, there's got to be this, you know, little voice on your shoulder saying, you know, we were not that bad. In fact, Mike and Aaron were, you know, that duo was highly productive. Now, I know wins and losses is ultimately how you're, you know, how you're judged. But I mean, look at the, you know, the numbers that Aaron put up. I mean, my goodness, I mean, they're incredible. That's always hard to you know, to do year in and year out. It's just hard to do. And Aaron has managed to do it for a long time, and kudos to him. And I don't foresee his game really diminishing any. The fear would be, you know, if I really followed the Packers like I did, of course, when I was playing, but I would be a little bit fearful of every coach kind of wants to put his stamp on things. And they may say one thing, but and a lot of times, you know, they do other. You know, we're going to focus on Aaron. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to keep things the same for the most part. But then again, that's not necessarily true. And I don't know if you necessarily want to change much when it's working. And Aaron's been working. Now, other things have to come into place. But he can't play defense, and he's not the running game, so on and so forth. So, you know, it's going to be interesting how things develop. And I hope for Aaron's case and for the Packers and for the fans that it's in a good way. But, you know, that's big shoes to fill for LaFleur, because I think Mike McCarthy really did a heck of a job. Could he have done better? We all could do better, my goodness. But
right.
It's going to be interesting how the dynamics kind of unfold here. You know, Aaron's a stubborn guy in a good way, and that's really what's made him really, along with his talent, so good, because he, you know, he's who he is, and he sticks to that. And you got to commend him for that. And how LaFleur handles that, and his quarterback coach, and so on and so forth, handles that will be very interesting.
So did you and McCarthy, I know it was a long time ago, Brett, but did you and McCarthy kind of hash out, okay, here's who I am, coach, and I don't want to change everything about me? Because before you were off the charts great in 2009 for the Vikings, you had an awesome 2007 season. You guys go 13-3. You reach the NFC Championship game. You played great. I mean, I'm just wondering, did you guys have to find a common ground? And was 2006 kind of a year where you spent much of the year finding that common ground with a new head coach?
You know, really, Mike and I worked well together because, you know, we had been together in 99. I think a lot
right.
of people have forgot that. And I really enjoyed him. You know, it was a short stint, so you really don't get to know each other that well. But I really liked him. And his thoughts were just his thoughts, because he was not the OC, and he was not able to inject a lot of his thoughts and ideas into the offense. But when he came back, you know, there was not like, I need to get to know Mike and vice versa. We knew each other. I would say the dynamics throughout the time that I spent with Mike the second go-around were good, because what I felt like we did really well was there were ideas that Mike had, and I don't want to say spread, but more of a gun, as you kind of come to expect with Mike McCarthy's offense, you know, with Aaron, you know, gun, spread them out, try to, you know, find matchups that are favorable, those types of things. And so I was in the latter part of my career, obviously, and trying to find a happy medium or a middle ground where you kind of do, because I felt like the best part of my game was play action, boots and things like that, especially early in my career. Gun and spread offense, so to speak, was a little bit foreign to me. If you think of the West Coast offense and Joe Montana and Steve Young, they never lined up in the gun. in for the most part of my career, I never lined up in the gun. And so Mike kind of really took it to a new level. And I think that was good for Aaron because he got to kind of watch and see. I know he wanted to play, of course. But when it's time for him to take over, he knew Mike much better than I did when I was in my first, you know, I think, like you said, 2006, my first year with him, the second go around. We were kind of feeling our way through things. And I thought we did a good job overall of working through that. We spent a lot of time, just he and I, talking about different ideas and things like that. And we didn't always agree on things, but it was a good working relationship. And I think that kind of springboarded into, you know, the next phase with Aaron and Mike. And then, you know, things just kind of developed. You go, oh, no, he's really good at that. We're going to run more of that. You know, like with Holmgren, we love to run screens, but what I did almost by accident in one game is I threw an actual route on the, it was a screen that was called, and we had like a shallow cross with I think it was Sterling, and no one covered him, and I actually threw the shallow cross and we got big yardage. And after that we added that as a play, so we read the play but also had the screen, so we made them cover the play, and if they didn't, I threw it. If they covered the play, then I threw the screen. So that kind of happened over, you know, over time. And so I felt like that's kind of what happened with Aaron and Mike.
Brett, so when you talked about when you guys did disagree and you have Mike McCarthy in, he wants to kind of have his offense. And I think this is where the parallels with Matt LaFleur and Aaron are going to be. How do you figure out who wins that? Because you're taking the snap and you're going to do what you think is, but how do you balance that?
You know what? That's the million-dollar question. I try to relate your question to my last few years where I went through McCarthy, Eric Mangini, Brad Childress, and then we finished out the, you know, the my last year with
Leslie Frazier.
So you know, I knew what worked for me. And see, the good thing for me when I was in Minnesota is I had Darrell Bevell, who knew me very well and was a close friend. And he knew that we may have a run play to the right, and I would throw a bubble to the right if the slot defender came on run support. He knew that. Brad probably had seen that done to him numerous times by me, but he had never coached anyone who would do it. And so I would do it. And, you know,
what happens if it didn't work?
Like it. He didn't particularly like it, even when it worked sometimes, believe it or not, because it was not what he coached. And so there was a little bit of a clash there. I only did things because they had worked for me in the past. And look, nothing works 100% of the time, but I went off of my gut, and I even said to Brad at one time, and I thought Brad was a very bright mind. We got along fine, so don't, you know, I'm not trying to stir the pot, but this is what the dynamics are like in a situation like LaFleur and Aaron. I knew that that the things that I had done in the past had worked, not always, but had worked. And My feeling was you brought me in because of that. Maybe that added sixth sense, or you know, whatever, that little edge that maybe a younger guy didn't give you. And so I felt like that's what I was brought in for. And so I was not going to change the way I played because that you brought me in to play the way I played in the leadership. And so I did what I did. And so be it.
Talking with Brett Favre on Wilde and Tausch. Brett, I want to ask you one other thing from your memory banks, and that is when Mike Sherman came in 2000, And he put an emphasis on complementing your game with a commitment to the run. And obviously, Amon in 2003 ran for like a million yards. You were terrific that season as well. How? Because that's another thing LaFleur's saying, is that this is an important part of this style of offense, is being committed to the run. Nobody dropped back to pass more in the NFL last year than Aaron Rodgers. What do you remember from Sherman and Rossley wanting to run the ball, and were you a skeptic at first, and then were you converted when you saw how much easier your life became with Amon Green running as much and as productively as he did? Or what do you remember from that?
No, I remember it very well. I thought it was a very good plan, idea. The design was really good. Look, you cannot deny how effective our running game was. And Mark was a big part of that. Our offensive line was kicking ass and taking names, and Amon Green was running all over everyone. And you could point to a lot of guys who were important. I remember Nick Lucci. I mean, he was blowing people up. And the compliment, I mean, really, that was kind of our bread and butter. That was when you came to play the Packers. I'm sure the head coach got up there and said, you got to stop the power. You got to stop the outside zone, you know, whatever. And, yeah, they got bread or whatever, but they hang their hat on that. And we were really good at it. And I had no problems with it. And our play-action game was really good because of that. We were prolific. Maybe not in the way that you would think the Packers would have been prolific during that time, but we were super productive. And, again, I think it was a great plan. I think it was a great design. If anything, maybe we could have hit more bigger shots, play action, just everyone run sell, one man route. But overall, it was a fun offense to play in. It was a little different because it was a run first mentality. But again, it was super productive. And I think, with Aaron, and I kind of look at New England as kind of the measuring stick. You can't say, I don't even know if they've had a 1,000-yard rusher in recent memory. And so what? They run just enough to keep you at bay. And they're very good at, counting the numbers in the box. And we only pass unless, not so much have to, but we pick and choose what we do. And I think that's really kind of the blueprint that the Packers and all teams should, if you have a 1,000, it doesn't matter if you have a 5,000-yard passer or a 1,000-yard rusher or a 2,000-yard rusher. The bottom line is it leading you to wins and where you want to go, whatever it takes. And I think the combination of a good enough running game that can offset you having to throw every time and being, a sitting duck back there, then you can be really productive. And finding that that middle ground that is just enough of both is going to be the key to it all.
And the play-action game was just part of that. I mean, it also kept you healthier, didn't it? Like, I know you were the ultimate tough guy, and you played through everything, but that also helped, right?
Absolutely. And I'll point to a game that was the first game I ever played with Minnesota. We play at Cleveland. I really don't know what to expect. I'm kind of thinking, I hope I don't have to throw 40 or 50 times in the first game. Not that I'm thinking I would, but I said, I really kind of want to ease into it. Well, it couldn't have gone any better. Adrian just crushes it. He runs for 180 yards in the game. And really, we almost threw, and we were comfortably in the lead. It couldn't have gone any better. I didn't get touched. I threw two touchdowns. I think I had 150 yards passing. You were not going to go home and high-five anyone because your stats were off the charts. But we won the game. I didn't get touched. And I really – we, we the, you know, I jokingly say they threw passes in that game just to make sure I didn't get bored or unhappy. That's kind of how it went. And so, and I say that because that's how that sort of unfolded for us, you know, with Mike Sherman and Tom Rossley era. You know, not always, but for the most part, it was you pick and choose your throws, and you should have somebody open, and that was the case.
Brett, Bart Starr passes away, and I know you had a lot of interesting things to say. He wrote you notes. How regularly did you get those notes? And can you just talk a little bit about what Bart Starr meant to you and to your family?
You know, my initial statement, I don't know if I can add anything to that when I talked about how much of a gentleman and how nice of a man he was and thoughtful. And I can point to the letters that he wrote. How many he wrote? I mean, hundreds. Not only after good games, but it may have been after, not necessarily even after a game. Maybe it was, a tough game, tough loss. Maybe I didn't play so well. And during the private ceremony in Birmingham, which Deanna and I went to, I got up and they asked me to say a few words, and it was a good moment because it was really story time, and everyone that got up told a story. Most of them, everyone got a chuckle out of them, including mine. And one of the letters that I got from Bart was after we had won the Super Bowl in New Orleans. And so, you know, this letter basically starts off as it always did. Hey, congratulations. You know, what a great season. What a great win. And I'd be more happy for you and your team, so on and so forth. But then, you know, Bart was a perfectionist in so many ways and a true gentleman and professional. This is typical Bart. Then he says, I am a little bit concerned about how you wore your hat during media day.
That old weathered Nike hat you had?
I think it was because I was turned backwards or something like that, you know. And
with the sunglasses.
You couldn't help but get a chuckle out of it. But that was Bart. You know, he was always quick to congratulate and commend and you know, say all kinds of nice things. But he was also, I wouldn't say critical, but he would point out things that he felt like in his eyes were unprofessional and just wanted you to be aware of it.
Talking with Brett Favre on Wilde and Tausch. Brett, you mentioned Aaron earlier. He told the story before you came back for the jersey, or maybe it was for the Ring of Honor, about the trick you pulled on him where you took his helmet and put it on the table in the locker room.
Yeah.
And had everybody sign it.
He didn't like that one.
No, he didn't. But, you know, we have a laugh about it now. Look, when I was in Atlanta, if he thought that was hazing, God forbid he would have been on Glanville's team, because let me tell you, I can't even tell you the things that the guys would do or try to do to the rookies. But I thought it was fun.
It was fun.
You know, my clothes every day, my street clothes in Atlanta, when I got done from practice and showered, my street clothes were laying in either the hot tub or the cold tub or in a spare shower soaking wet. And then the next day I'd come in and my shoulder pads would be missing or my shoelaces were cut right when it was time to go out to practice. And, you know, this was over and over again. And, you know, I come in, I'm like, really? I'm like, come on, guys. You've gotten me the last 50 days. Please.
Well, you know what? So, that worked out well for Packer fans.
We had a little fun with Aaron.
Yeah.
I think he admitted after the fact that he should have never cleaned off the helmet because it would have had your autograph on it and it would have been much more valuable. The one I remember you doing to all of us, especially when the media was in there, was I don't know where you would get this vial of awful stench-smelling oil, but you would put it in a towel and then drop it. And chuckle as you left the locker room. What? Where did you get that stuff? And was that your favorite move? Like, what was your favorite thing to do, whether it was to us in the media or to your teammates, as a practical joke?
I always try to make it fun, obviously. That was just my mentality. Not everyone's like that, you know. And some people, you know, enjoyed the kidding around. Other people, you know, thought I played too much. But Red Daddy was kind of my go-to guy, or Pepper was my go-to guy for, like, for example, I had Red Daddy got me a fart machine, which I later used on Lee Rimmel on the bus ride
Larry
to Monday Night Football against Chicago. And you know, I even had Holmgren laughing on the front going to the game because I put this remote control deal under Lee Rimmel's seat. And I kept hitting the button, and it would make a god-awful fart. And everyone assumed Lee had the farts and didn't know it, which happens at some point in your life. And Holmgren never turned his head left or right, but he chuckled all the way to Soldier Field. And I still don't know if he knew that was a remote control or if Lee just was uncontrollable that night. You know, so I was always doing things like that. You know, the stink bombs was like a little sulfur, like it almost was like a smelling salts type deal. You could break it and it made the worst sulfur smell possible. But you guys never got the hint, because what I was trying to do was run you out of the locker room. But you guys were tough. You know, you could stick it out, and you did.
It's all good.
You know, I love you guys.
Yeah, not always, but sometimes you did. I understand. We had our moments. I was working on an old story for a book about you leaving Atlanta, and you brought up Glanville, and to their dying days, Jerry Glanville and Ken Herrock will blame each other for being stupid enough to trade a Pro Football Hall of Famer, even if he was the guy who was missing the team picture that year. That was all Glanville, right? I mean, we blame him, right?
Yes. Ken Herrock drafted me. He wanted me, and that's where I think the butting of heads began. I don't think initially Jerry Glanville disliked me because he didn't know me. But I think he disliked the fact that he wanted to draft someone else at that position. And I'm not saying quarterback. I think he may have wanted just a different player. And I don't know this for certain, so this is all I'm assuming. But I do know that Ken Herrock wanted me, and that never changed. But I think that Glanville's, his plan was, I'm going to make life miserable on a guy that Ken, you know, drafted in the place of someone else who I wanted. And, he knew he wasn't going to play me unless he absolutely had to. So he was going to make life miserable on me. And he did. And I'm very thankful that he did now after the fact. At the time, I really felt like I was stuck with nowhere to go. So it kind of made me, I missed a team pitcher. I put on 25 pounds. I drank a lot of beer, ate a lot of hot wings. Didn't care because they didn't care about me. I didn't care about them. That was kind of the mentality. Poor way to handle things, but it did work out. It's almost like my plan hatched to perfection. But I don't.
Diabolical.
I don't want anyone to go, you know, I think I'm going to do that. Oh. Because that's not the right way to handle it.
Brett, what did he do to make you miserable?
Well, the first meeting I ever had with him was I was late for the first practice of minicamp because there was two flights out of Gulfport, Mississippi to Atlanta, and the first one was delayed. So when I got there, they were halfway done with practice. And, I go out on the practice field, and Danny Mock, who I think still is with the Packers,
yes,
had picked me up and drove me to the facility and introduced. He said, "Coach, got your quarterback. Here's Brett. Brett, this Coach Jerry Glanville." And Jerry's first words to me were, what school are you from, Mississippi? And I said, Southern Miss, coach. And he said, well, gosh dang it, we drafted the wrong guy. We wanted the guy from Mississippi State. Which, was, you know, that was kind of the beginning of the end, and it never got better. So he would come around and practice, and he was a joke-telling guy. I mean, he'd walk around, hey, yeah, y'all heard the one about it. And he'd always like to come right in my area. And so he'd say this joke, well, you know, you're kind of torn because you know you need to watch practice, but this is the head coach, and you don't want to disregard him. So I'd laugh at his joke. And then next thing he would say, Mississippi, what's the play? And I'd say, I don't know, coach. Well, if you ever want to play, don't you think you should know the plays? And, yes, sir, coach. But I wanted to say, well, you're back here telling jokes right in my face. What am I supposed to do? You know, so that's kind of how it was all year. And the fact that I was live in practice, which that is unheard of in pro football. The problem was, which he didn't account for, was I thrived off of it. I loved it. It gave me an opportunity to show what I could do. And the harder they hit me, the better I was. And the quicker I got up. And to a point where I'm sure he was like, you know, bad move. Because I was really winning over the guys, even though I wasn't playing.
So you had no red jersey on. It was live, go hit him.
No, heck no. In fact, he would say, all right, we got goal line. Mississippi's live.
That is unbelievable. I think he wanted you out. I don't know how that story ever got misconstrued. It seems pretty obvious to me that it was Glanville. Brett, I think one of the things everybody in Green Bay loves to hear about is that relationship with you and Aaron. And are you surprised that you guys have become as good of friends as you have?
I guess yes and no. You know, we were, I would say, strong enemies. I wanted to play my tail off, and so did he, and especially when we played against each other. I thought we got along really well when he was a young, you know, 21, 22, 23-year-old. And then we went about our way. And obviously he has paved his own way and then some. I mean, he stands alone in the league today as the best player, in my opinion. And I'm okay with that. I know people want to say, who's the best player in Packers history? And, you know, people want to pick sides. I'm not picking sides. I could care less what people say either way. I think Aaron is a great quarterback presently, one of the all-time greats in the league itself, and will be remembered as that. And I'm really proud of him. And our relationship now is very good, and I'm more happy about that than anything else. I've been able to see a different side of him, a non-playing side, and I think he's at a much better place in his life right now, which is great for him, and I think great for the Packers.
And at some point, there is going to be a transition, and somebody's going to get drafted. When that happened for you, when Aaron got picked, did it rejuvenate you? And is there anything you do differently? I know there's a lot made of I'm not here to help, all that. Anything you do differently and give recommendations when and if this happens to Aaron?
Well, I stand by. There's a lot of things I've said and done in my life that I don't stand by. But saying I'm not here to mentor anybody, especially quarterback, I stand by that. And I think Aaron gets that as well. Look, you want to play as long as you want to play. And when Aaron was drafted, and obviously a first-round pick, which had never happened in my time there, you know, to a certain extent, the writing's on the wall. And at some point, he is going to get his opportunity, which means you're getting phased out. I wasn't upset with Aaron at all. My initial thoughts were, it's about time. I knew this time would come. But I still felt like I could play, and I knew ultimately that I judged whether or not I would play longer or not by the way I played. And so I controlled my destiny, not Aaron, not anyone else. So if I felt like I still could play, I was going to work as hard as I possibly could. I was going to do the things that I'd always done and let the chips fall where they may. And so there was never any animosity towards Aaron. And, I can point to so many times where Aaron said, "Hey, what are you doing?" Like after our team film study, after practice, I said, "I'm going to go watch a little film. You mind if I tag along?" "No." And we would sit in meeting rooms and watch film, and he would ask questions. And I enjoyed that because I feel like that some of those things have carried over to how he plays today and how he looks at things. And obviously his game is in some ways a lot different than mine. And it's very good. And I enjoy watching him play. But it isn't your job to mentor. That's the coach's job. And it's the young guy's job to get what he can from the guy in front of him. And so, some people understood that comment. Other people said, "Oh, how dare you do that?" It is a competitive job and sport, and I think sometimes people lose sight of that.
Talking with Brett Favre on Wilde and Tausch. Brett, two more for me, and then Tausch is going to finish up. One, I put out a question on Twitter last night. It was a fill-in-the-blank. When I think of Brett Favre, I think of blank. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, they are overwhelmingly positive. I used a little clip of you and Rodgers on the sideline when you give them the old, "Put her in the old vice." There were responses of, "Take back two of them flapjacks. I got to stay hungry for the Crimson
Brett,
Tide."
What do you think of Jason's impression of you? Do you think it's good, or should we have an intervention? Because he thinks he's pretty good.
He was doing an impression of me.
I think that's what he thought. Yeah.
It's the best that he can do. I mean, what can I say?
Don't confuse effort with results, is the Brad Childress quote.
Exactly.
So.
That's right. That's right.
Some of the left-handed footballs, all that, take 2 weeks off, then quit. That was just you. You knew you were mic'd up, obviously, but people absolutely love those. Did you ratchet it up when you had the NFL Films mic, or was that you all the time?
I think Tausch would tell you the same thing. No, I was like that all the time. Mic'd up or not didn't matter. I was all about. Look, there were times where I didn't feel like having fun. You had a tough loss, or maybe you had a couple weeks where you lost, and coaches are riding your tail. You're feeling sorry for yourself, but in those times too, I tried my best, maybe even harder, to keep it fun, as much for me, but equally as much for everyone else. Because and again, everyone's different. Some people, we're not that type of personality, but I felt like we put the time in. We always put the time in. I mean, we're going to do that. We're going to practice. We're going to meet, and that never changed and never will change. But it's a long season. You have to have fun, and even when you don't feel like having fun, making someone smile when the last thing they want to do is smile was one of the joys that I had. And I wanted everyone who stepped on the field with me, whether it be practice and even meeting rooms and so on and so forth, I wanted them to have fun and look forward to coming in the next day. And I feel like I accomplished that for all of my career. Maybe not so much in Atlanta, but, that's one of the things I'm most proud of, is that I had fun and was able to do something that I love to do for so long and give a lot of joy to a lot of people. And so that's just who I was.
Another thing that the mic picked up was Mike Holmgren telling you, "No rocket balls, please." I remember when you came back for your name being unveiled for being in the Hall of Fame, and you were sitting with Jerry Kramer in the alumni suite, and you said, we got to get Jerry in. Well, Jerry's in now. Should Mike Holmgren be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Absolutely, 100%, not a question. Do I have a biased opinion? Of course I do. But if you look at the numbers and what he has done compared to other coaches, some legendary coaches, there is no question that he should be in the Hall of Fame. No question whatsoever.
Boom. I guess that's I don't know if you could be more you sure? You're not waffling at all.
How
on
do
this.
You really feel?
So Holmgren should be it.
Well, I mean, look, Tony Dungy, who I got a great deal of respect for, who went in with me and, you know, we're joined at the hip in that regard. And I am not knocking him one bit. All I'm saying is his numbers and what he's done is no different than Mike Holmgren. And maybe when you factor in everything, maybe even better. So, and I'm pointing to most recent memory. And Peter King and I had a long talk about it. He compared Mike to some of these legendary coaches that even I didn't know about, and how he stacks up. And it's just unbelievable that he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Brett, last thing for me. Peyton Manning came into town. There's a lot of a Lombardi Lounge, all that. How much fun was that? And when what was kind of the why you participated in that and why you got involved?
Well, I'm not real sure when it's going to air. There's a lot of episodes that Peyton did, because it's a pretty neat little deal what he's doing. He's going around to all NFL cities and doing some fun stuff with either present or past players, if not both. About, you know, the history of that franchise. Obviously, Packers have a storied history. It was lighthearted. There were a couple of serious questions, but we played around with it. And I think, just from Peyton, from his side, it's really neat, because one of the things he's doing, I think the last city he was doing was going to be New Orleans, and he was going to do the Saints and sit down with his dad. I mean, really cool stuff. And again, it's for the most part, it's lighthearted, and this is all in conjunction with the 100-year anniversary of the NFL, which they're doing a big deal this year. And there's other things as well, not just Peyton's deal. But so that's really what it was about, and I think people will enjoy it.
Awesome. Brett, we're looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. We're going to let you go. I know we kept you. We usually keep you about an hour. We're going to try to go for two.
Well, wait, we got a third hour now.
Yeah,
you can't stay for another hour?
We only ask once a year, and we'll get it for 2 hours.
I got to go wash clothes, guys. I'd love to. I got to vacuum and wash clothes.
Oh, vacuum. You got to get one of those bots.
Yeah, I got a house clean today.
Get one of those bots that vacuums for you. You don't need to vacuum. But what do we expect golf-wise? You kind of fibbed last year, said you didn't practice. Played a lot better. You're going to be with Jack playing, so the pressure's going to be on. Are you going to be up for it?
No, the pressure's on. I don't think my game has changed any. You know, it's one of those days, you know, golf for me now is like every once in a blue moon. Before an event like this, I'll hit balls for a couple weeks leading up. But as you know, you can hit balls your whole life and be humbled at any time during the round. You hit them great on the range, not so great during the round. That may be the case this week. I don't know. I don't think you're going to see anything any better than past experiences. But I'm just looking forward to the fact that I'm playing with the golf version of the Pope.
That's what you did when you played with Tausch, too.
No, we were against each other. We competed.
Yeah. He was my arch rival. And he played pretty good. Pretty
not bad.
Good,
this is about as good as I was going to play. So, well, we're looking forward to it. Brett, thanks again for all your time and for coming up and doing this for a great cause. And we'll, I'm sure you're going to see a monster turnout, and your big goal is going to be not to hit anybody, would be my guess.
Yeah, that's right. And look, before we hang up, I know we've mentioned the track ride. I just want to thank everyone. You know, we've done that like the golf. Come up to that every year. John Burke, the guys at Trek, are, you know, you and I, our big buddy Stitch, and all the people that work there at Trek. I mean, what an awesome event that they put on. And, again, what a show of support. And there's not a more important thing to give to or participate in than the MAC Fund. I think we all can agree on that. So kudos to Trek and to everyone for supporting it.
Awesome. Thanks, Brett.
Brett, thanks for making time for us. It's always great. We love this once-a-year opportunity. Hit them straight on Saturday. Thanks.
All right, guys. Good talking with you.